Relationships are wonderful. Marriages are wonderful. But the reality is they are all temporary. However, your relationship with you is eternal. It goes on forever. Love the family within you, the child, the parent, the teenager, and your own adult. Remember, there is a teenager inside you too. Welcome that teenager. Work with the teen as you work with the little child. What were all the difficulties that you went through as a teenager? Ask your teen the question that you ask your child. Help the teenager through the intimidating episodes and apprehensive moments of puberty and beyond. Make these times okay. Learn to love your teenager as you learn to love your child and yourself. We can't love and accept each other until we love and accept that lost child within us. How old is the little lost child within you? 3, 4, 5? Usually the child is less than 5 years old, because that is generally when the child shuts down out of the need to survive. Take your child by the hand and love it. Create a wonderful life for you and your child. Say to yourself, I'm willing to learn to love my child. I am willing. The universe will respond. You will find ways to heal your child and yourself. If we want to heal, we must be willing to feel our feelings and move through them to the other side for the healing. Remember, our higher power is always available to support us in our efforts. No matter what your early childhood was like, the best or the worst, you and only you are in charge of your life now. You can spend your time blaming your parents or your early environment, but all that accomplishes is to keep you stuck in victim patterns. It never helps you get the good you say you want. Love is the biggest eraser I know. Love erases even the deepest and most painful memories, because love goes deeper than anything else. If your mental images of the past are very strong and you keep affirming it's all their fault, you stay stuck. Do you want a life of pain or one of joy? The choice and power are always within you. Look into your eyes and love you and the little child within. Chapter 10, Growing Up and Getting Old. Be as understanding with your parents as you want them to be with you. Communicating with our parents. When I was growing up, my teenage years were the most difficult of all. I had so many questions, but I did not want to listen to those who thought they had the answers, especially adults. I wanted to learn everything by myself because I did not trust the information that grown-ups gave me. I felt particular animosity towards my parents because I was an abused child. I could not understand how my stepfather could treat me the way he did, nor could I understand how my mother could simply ignore what he was doing to me. I felt cheated and misunderstood, and I was certain that my family specifically and the world in general were against me. Through my many years spent in the counseling of others, particularly young people, I have found that many people share the same feelings about their parents that I had about mine. Some of the words I hear teenagers use to describe how they feel are trapped, judged, watched, and misunderstood. Of course, it would be great to have parents who would be accommodating in any given situation. However, in most cases, that is not possible. Although our parents are merely human beings like the rest of us, we often feel that they are being unfair and unreasonable and have no understanding of what we are going through. One young man I counseled had a very difficult time relating to his father. He felt that they had nothing in common, and when his father spoke to him, it was simply to utter some negative or belittling comment. I asked the young man if he knew how his grandfather had treated his father, and he admitted that he didn't. His grandfather had died before the young man was born. I suggested that he ask his father about his own childhood and how it affected him. At first, the young man was hesitant because it was uncomfortable to talk to his father without feeling he would be ridiculed or judged. However, he took the plunge and agreed to approach his father. The next time I saw him, the young man seemed more at ease. "Wow," he exclaimed, "I didn't realize what kind of a childhood my own father had." Apparently, his grandfather had insisted that all of his children address him as sir, and they lived by the old standard that children were to be seen but not heard. If they dared to utter one contrary word, they were severely beaten. No wonder his father was critical. When we grow up, many of us have the good intentions of treating our children differently than the way we were treated. However, we learn from the world around us, and sooner or later, we begin to sound and act just like our parents. In the case of this young man, his father inflicted the same kind of verbal abuse on his son that his own father had heaped on him. He may not have intended to do so. He was merely acting in a way consistent with his own upbringing. However, the young man came to understand a little more about his father, and as a result, they were able to communicate more freely. Although it would take some effort and patience on both their parts before their level of communication would be ideal, at least they were moving in the right direction. I strongly believe that it is very important for all of us to take the time to find out more about our parents' childhoods. If your parents are still alive, you can ask them, "What was it like when you were growing up? What was love like in your family? How did your parents punish you? What kind of peer pressure did you have to face in those days? Did your parents like your friends? Did you have a job while you were growing up?" By learning more about our parents, we can see the patterns that have shaped who they are and, in turn, see why they treat us as they do. As we learn to empathize with our parents, we will see them in a new, more loving light. You may be able to open doors to a more communicative, loving relationship, one that has mutual respect and trust. If you have difficulty even talking with your parents, first start in your mind or in front of the mirror. Imagine yourself telling them, "There's something I want to speak to you about. I want you to know who I am." Go through this process several days in a row. It will help you decide what you want to say and how to say it. Or do a meditation and in your mind, talk to each of your parents and clean up your old issues. Forgive them and forgive yourself. Tell them you love them, then prepare to tell them the same things in person. At one of my groups, a young man told me he had a lot of anger and that he didn't trust others. He recycled this pattern of distrust over and over again in all his relationships. When we got to the root of the problem, he told me that he was so angry with his father for not being the person he wanted him to be. Again, when we are on a spiritual pathway, it's not up to us to change the other person. First of all, we need to release all the pent-up feelings we harbor against our parents. And then we need to forgive them for not being who we wanted them to be. We always want everyone else to be like us, to think like us, to dress like us, to do what we do. However, as you know, we are all so very different. In order to have the space to be ourselves, we need to give that space to others. By forcing our parents to be something that they are not, we cut off our own love. We judge our parents just the way that they judge us. If we want to share with our parents, we need to begin by erasing our own preconceived judgments of them. Many of you continue to have power struggle games with your parents as you grow older. Parents push a lot of buttons. So if you want to stop playing the game, you are going to have to stop taking a part in it. It's time for you to grow up and decide what you want. You can begin by calling your parents by their first name. Calling them mommy and daddy when you are in your 40s only keeps you stuck in the little child role. Start becoming two adults instead of parent and child. Another suggestion is to write an affirmative treatment that details the kind of relationship you want with your mother and or father. Begin declaring these words for yourself. After a while, you can tell him or her face to face. If your mother or father is still pushing your buttons, you are not letting either of them know how you really feel. You have a right to have the life you want. You have a right to be an adult. It may not be easy, I know. First decide what it is that you need, and then tell your mother or father what that is. Don't make them wrong. Ask, how can we work this out? Remember, with understanding comes forgiveness, and with forgiveness comes love. When we progress to the point where we can love and forgive our parents, we will be well on our way to being able to enjoy fulfilling relationships with everyone in our lives. Teens need self-esteem. It alarms me that the rate of suicide among our teenagers is so on the rise. It seems that more and more young people feel overwhelmed by the responsibilities of life and would just as soon give up rather than to persevere and experience the multitude of adventures that life has to offer. Much of this problem has to do with the way we, as adults, expect them to respond to life situations. Do we want them to react as we would? Do we bombard them with negativity? The period between 10 and 15 can be a very critical time. Children in that age group have the tendency to conform, and they will do anything to be accepted by their peers. In their need for acceptance, they often hide their true feelings for fear they will not be accepted and loved for whom they really are. The peer pressure and societal stress that I experienced when I was young pale in comparison to that which today's young people must endure. And yet, when I was 15, due to physical and mental abuse, I left home and school to be on my own. Think how jarring it must be for the child of today to have to deal with drug abuse, physical abuse, sexually transmitted diseases, peer pressure and gangs, family problems, and on a global level, threat of nuclear war, environmental upheavals, crime, and so much more. As a parent, you can discuss the differences between negative and positive peer pressure with your teen. Peer pressure is all around us from the moment we're born until the day we leave the planet. We must learn how to deal with it and not let it control us. Similarly, it is important for us to gain some knowledge and understanding of why our children are shy, mischievous, sad, slow in school, destructive, etc. Children are strongly influenced by the thinking, feeling patterns established in the home. And he or she makes daily choices and decisions from that belief system. If the home environment is not conducive to trusting and loving, the child will seek trust, love, and compassion elsewhere. Many gangs are a place where children feel safe. They form a family bond, no matter how dysfunctional it is. I truly believe that a lot of hardships could be avoided if we could only get young people to ask themselves one important question before they act. Will this make me feel better about myself? We can help our teenagers see their choices in each situation. Choice and responsibility put power back into their hands. It enables them to do something without feeling like victims of the system. If we can teach children that they are not victims, and that it is possible for them to change their experiences by taking responsibility for their own lives, we will begin to see major breakthroughs. It is vitally important to keep the lines of communication open with children, especially when they're in their teen years. Usually what happens when children start to talk about their likes and dislikes is that they are told over and over again, don't say that, don't do that, don't feel that, don't be that way, don't express that, don't. And eventually the children stop communicating and sometimes leave home. If you want to have your children around as you grow older, keep the lines of communication open when they are younger. Applaud your child's uniqueness. Allow your teenagers to express themselves in their own style, even if you think it's just a fad. Don't make them wrong or tear them down. Goodness knows I've been through many, many fads in my lifetime, and so will you and your teenagers. What Do You Really Want for Your Children is an excellent book by Wayne Dyer. Children learn from our actions. Children never do what we tell them to do. They do what we do. We can't say don't smoke or don't drink or don't do drugs if we do them. We have to serve as examples and live the sort of life we want our children to express. When parents are willing to work on loving themselves, it's amazing to see the harmony that is achieved within the family. Children respond with a new sense of self-esteem and start to value and respect who they are. An exercise in self-esteem that you and your children can do together is to make a list of some of the goals you would like to achieve. Ask your children to write down how they see themselves in 10 years. In 1 year, in 3 months, what kind of lives do they want to have? What kind of friends would be most beneficial? Have them list their goals with short descriptions of each, as well as how they can make their dreams come true. And you do the same. All of you might keep the list nearby to remind yourself of your goals. In 3 months' time, go over the list together. Have the goals changed? Don't let your children beat themselves up if they didn't get as far as they wanted. They can always revise their list. What is most important to give young people is something positive to look forward to. Separation and divorce. If there is separation and/or divorce in the family, it is important that each parent be supportive. It's very stressful for a child to be told that the other parent is no good. As the parent, you want to love yourself through the fears and anger as much as possible. The children will pick up feelings from you. If you're going through a lot of turmoil and pain, they will surely pick that up from you. Explain to your children that your stuff has nothing to do with them and their inner worth. Don't let them get the idea that anything that's happened is their fault, because that's what most children think. Let them know that you love them very much and will always be there for them. I suggest you do mirror work with your children every morning. Do affirmations that will get you through the trying times easily and effortlessly so that everyone will be okay. Release your painful experiences with love and affirm happiness for all concerned. There's a wonderful group called the California State Task Force to promote self-esteem and personal and social responsibility. It was created in 1987 by Assemblyman John Vasconcelos. Among the appointed members are Jack Canfield and Dr. Emmett Miller. I support its efforts in researching and making recommendations to the government to bring self-esteem programs into the schools. Other states are following suit by including self-esteem curriculum in the classroom. Look into these groups. I believe that we are on the brink of some major changes in our society, especially with regard to understanding our own self-worth. If teachers, especially, can get their own self-worth on the right track, they will help our children tremendously. Children reflect the social and economic pressures with which we are faced. any program having to do with self-esteem will need to encompass students, parents, and teachers, as well as businesses and organizations. Growing older graciously. So many of us fear growing old and looking old. We make growing old so terrible and unattractive. Yet it is a normal and natural process of living. If we can't accept our inner child and be comfortable with who we were and who we are, how can we accept the next stage? If you don't grow old, what is the alternative? You leave the planet. As a culture, we have created what I call youth worship. It's all very well and good to love ourselves at certain ages, but why can't we love ourselves as we get older? We will eventually go through every age of life. Many women feel a lot of anxiety and fear when they think about getting old. The gay community also deals with a lot of issues having to do with youth and looks and loss of beauty. Getting old may mean getting wrinkles and gray hair and saggy skin. And yes, I want to grow old. It's all part of being here. We are on this planet to experience every part of life. I can understand that we don't want to get old and sick, so let's separate those two ideas. Let's not imagine or envision ourselves getting sick as a way to die. I do not personally believe that we have to die with illness. Instead, when it is our time to leave, when we have accomplished what we came here to do, we can take a nap or go to bed at night and leave peacefully. We don't have to become deathly ill. We don't have to be hooked to machines. We don't have to lie suffering in a nursing home in order to leave the planet. There's a tremendous amount of information available on how to stay healthy. Don't put it off. Do it now. When we get older, we want to feel wonderful so we can continue to experience new adventures. I read something a while ago that intrigued me. It was an article about a San Francisco medical school that had discovered that the way we age is not determined by genes, but by something they call the aging set point, a biological time clock that exists in our minds. This mechanism actually monitors when and how we begin to age. The set point, or aging clock, is regulated in great part by one important factor, our attitudes towards getting old. For instance, if you believe that 35 is middle-aged, that belief triggers biological changes in your body that cause it to accelerate the aging process when you reach 35. Isn't that fascinating? Somewhere, somehow, we decide what is middle age and what is old age. Where are you setting that aging set point within you? I have this image in my mind that I'm going to live to be 96 years and still be active, so it's very important that I keep myself healthy. Remember, too, what we give out, we get back. Be aware of how you treat older people, because when you get old, that will be the way you are treated. If you believe certain concepts about old people, again, you are forming ideas that your subconscious will respond to. Our beliefs, our thoughts, our concepts about life and about ourselves always become true for us. Remember, I believe that you choose your parents before you were born in order to learn valuable lessons. Your higher self knew the experiences that were necessary for you to proceed on your spiritual course. So whatever you came to work out with your parents, get on with it. No matter what they say or do or said or did, you are here ultimately to love yourself. As parents, allow your children to love themselves by giving them the space to feel safe and to express themselves in positive, harmless ways. Remember, too, just as we choose our parents, our children also chose us. There are important lessons for all of us to work out. Parents who love themselves will find it easier to teach their children about self-love. When we feel good about ourselves, we can teach our children self-worth by example. The more we work on loving ourselves, the more our children will realize that it's an okay thing to do. Part 4. Applying your inner wisdom. All the theories in the world are useless unless there is action, positive change, and finally, healing. Chapter 11, Receiving Prosperity. When we get frightened, we want to control everything, and then we shut off the flow of good. Trust life. Everything we need is here for us. The power within us is willing to give us our fondest dreams and enormous plenty instantaneously. The problem is that we are not open to receiving it. If we want something, our higher power doesn't say, "I'll think about it." It readily responds and sends it through, but we have to be ready for it. If not, it goes back into the storehouse of unfulfilled desires. Many people come to my lectures and sit with their arms folded across their bodies, and I think, how are they going to let anything in? It's a wonderful symbolic gesture to open our arms wide so the universe notices and responds. For many, it's very scary, because if they open themselves up, they will think they may get terrible things, and they probably will, until they change whatever it is inside them that believes they will attract doom and gloom. When we use the term prosperity, a lot of people immediately think of money. However, there are many other concepts that come under the auspices of prosperity, such as time, love, success, comfort, beauty, knowledge, relationships, health, and of course money. If you are always feeling rushed because there isn't enough time to do everything you want, then you have a lack of time. You are poor in time. If you feel that success is beyond your reach, then you are not going to get it. If you feel life is burdensome and strenuous, then you will always feel uncomfortable. If you think you don't know very much and you're too dumb to figure things out, you will never feel connected to the wisdom of the universe. If you feel a lack of love and have poor relationships, then it will be difficult for you to attract love into your life. What about beauty? There is beauty all around us. Do you experience the beauty that is abundant on the planet? Or do you see everything as ugly and wasteful and dirty? How is your health? Are you sick all the time? Do you catch colds easily? Do you get many aches and pains? And then there is money. Many of you tell me there is never enough money in your life. What do you let yourself have? Or perhaps you feel you are on a fixed income. Who fixed it? None of the above has anything to do with receiving. People always think, oh, I want to get this and that and whatever. However, abundance and prosperity is about allowing yourself to accept. When you are not getting what you want, on some level, you are not allowing yourself to accept. If we are stingy with life, then life will be stingy with us. If we steal from life, life will steal from us. Being honest with ourselves. Honesty is a word we use a lot, not always understanding the true significance of what it means to be honest. It has nothing to do with morality or being a goody-goody. Being honest really has little to do with getting caught or going to jail. It is an act of love for ourselves. The main value of honesty is that whatever we give out in life, we will get back. The law of cause and effect is always operating on all levels. If we belittle or judge others, then we too are judged. If we are always angry, then we encounter anger wherever we go. The love we have for ourselves keeps us in tune with the love life has for us. For instance, imagine that your apartment has just been burglarized. Do you immediately think that you're a victim? My apartment was just ripped off. Who did this to me? It is a devastating feeling when something like that happens. However, do you stop to think of how and why you attracted the experience? Again, taking responsibility for creating our own experiences is not an idea that many of us want to accept all the time, perhaps just some of the time. It is so much easier to blame something outside of ourselves. Yet our spiritual growth cannot occur until we recognize that there is little of value outside of us. Everything comes from within. When I hear that someone has just been robbed or experienced some kind of loss, the first question I ask is, whom did you steal from lately? If a curious look comes over their face, I know I have touched a tender spot. If we think back to a time when we took something and then think of what we lost shortly thereafter, the connection between the two experiences can be an eye-opener. When we take something that isn't ours, we almost always lose something of greater value. We might take money or some object, and then we might lose a relationship. If we steal a relationship, we might lose a job. If we lift stamps and pens from the office, we might miss a train or a dinner date. The losses almost always hurt us in some important area of our lives. It's unfortunate that many people steal from large companies, department stores, restaurants, or hotels, and so on, rationalizing that these businesses can afford it. This type of rationalization does not work. The law of cause and effect continues to operate for each one of us. If we take, we lose. If we give, we get. It cannot be otherwise. If there are many losses in your life, or many things are going wrong, you might examine the ways in which you are taking. Some people who would not dream of stealing things will self-righteously rob another person of time or self-esteem. Each time we make another person feel guilty, we are stealing self-worth from them. To be truly honest on all levels takes a great deal of self-examination and self-awareness. When we take something that does not belong to us, we are, in effect, instructing the universe that we don't feel worthy of earning. We aren't good enough, we want to be stolen from, or we believe there is not enough to go around. We believe that we must be sneaky and grab to get our good. These beliefs become effective walls around us that prevent us from experiencing abundance and joy in our lives. These negative beliefs are not the truth of our being. We are magnificent and deserve the very best. This planet is abundantly plentiful. Our good always comes to us by the right of consciousness. The work we do in consciousness is always one of refining what we say and think and do. When we clearly understand that our thoughts create our reality, then we use our reality as a feedback mechanism to let us know what we need to change next. Being absolutely honest, down to the last paperclip, is a choice we make out of love for ourselves. Honesty helps to make our lives run more smoothly and more easily. If you go to a store and they don't charge you for something you've bought and you know it, then it's your spiritual obligation to tell them so. If you are aware, you call it to their attention. If you don't know it or only realize it when you get home or 2 days later, then that's something different. If dishonesty brings disharmony into our lives, imagine what love and honesty can create. The good in our lives, the wonderful surprises we have, These two we have created. As we look within ourselves with honesty and unconditional love, we will discover so much about our power. What we can learn to create with our own consciousness has far greater value than any amount of money we could possibly steal. Your home is your sanctuary. Everything is a reflection of what you believe you deserve. Look at your home. Is it a place that you really love to live in? Is it comfortable and joyous, or cramped, dirty, and always messy? The same with your car. Do you like it? How does it reflect the love you have for yourself? Are your clothes a bother and a nuisance and something you have to deal with? Your clothes are also a reflection of how you feel about yourself. Again, the thoughts we have about ourselves can always be changed. If you want to find a new home, begin by opening yourself up to finding the right place and affirm that it is waiting for you. When I was looking for a new home in Los Angeles, I couldn't believe that I would only find appalling places. I kept thinking that this is Los Angeles, and it's filled with wonderful apartments, so where are they? It took me 6 months to find the one I wanted, and it was magnificent. During the time I was looking, the building was being constructed, and when it was finished, I found it waiting for me. If you look for something, but you're not finding it, there is probably a good reason. If you want to move from where you are because you don't like it, thank your present home for being there. Appreciate it for sheltering you from the weather. If it's difficult to like it, start with one part of the house that you like. It may be a corner of your bedroom. Don't say, "I hate this old place," because if you do, you're not going to find something that you love. Love where you are, so you can be open to receiving a wonderful new home. If your home is messy and cluttered, then start cleaning it up. Your home is a reflection of your mind. Loving relationships. I'm a great admirer of Dr. Bernie Siegel, the Connecticut surgeon, who has written Love, Medicine, and Miracles. Dr. Siegel has learned much from his cancer patients, and I would like to share what he says about unconditional love. Many people, especially cancer patients, grow up believing that there is some terrible flaw at the center of their being, a defect they must hide if they are to have any chance for love. Feeling unloved and unlovable and condemned to loneliness if their true selves became known. Such individuals set up defenses against sharing their innermost feelings with anyone. Because such people feel a profound emptiness inside, they come to see all relationships and transactions in terms of getting something to fulfill the vaguely understood void within. They give love only on condition that they get something for it. And this leads to an ever deeper sense of emptiness which keeps the vicious cycle going. Whenever I give a lecture and allow my audience the opportunity to ask questions, I can always count on being asked one thing in particular. How can I create healthy, lasting relationships? All relationships are important because they reflect how you feel about yourself. If you are constantly beating yourself up by thinking that everything that goes wrong is your fault, or that you are always a victim, then you are going to attract the type of relationships that reinforce those beliefs in you. One woman told me that she was in a relationship with a very caring and loving man, yet she had a need to test his love. So I asked her, why would you test his love? She said that she felt unworthy of his love because she wasn't loving herself enough. So I suggested that 3 times a day she stand with her arms open and say, "I am willing to let the love in. It's safe to let the love in." Then I told her to look into her own eyes and say, I deserve and I am willing to have, even if I don't deserve. Too often you deny your good because you don't believe you can have it. For instance, you want to get married or have a long-lasting relationship. The person you go out with has four of the qualities you want in a partner. You know you're on your way. You want a little more of this or want to add a little something new to your list. Depending on how much you believe you deserve to be loved, you may have to go through a dozen people before you get what you really want. Likewise, if you believe that a higher power has surrounded you with truly loving people, or that everyone you meet or know brings only good into your life, then those are the types of relationships you will ultimately draw to yourself. Dependent relationships. Personal relationships always seem to be the first priority for many of us. Perhaps you are always searching for love. Hunting for love doesn't bring the right partner because the reasons for wanting love are unclear. We think, oh, if I only had someone who loved me, my life would be all better. That's not the way it works. One exercise that I recommend is to write down the qualities you want from a relationship, such as fun, intimacy, open and positive communication, etc., and look at your list. Are these standards impossible to fulfill? Which of these requirements could you supply yourself? There's a big difference between the need for love and being needy for love. When you are needy for love, it simply means that you are missing love and approval from the most important person you know, yourself. You become involved in relationships that are codependent and ineffectual for both partners. When we need someone else to fulfill us, we are codependent. When we rely on another to take care of us so that we don't have to do it ourselves, we become codependent. Many of us from dysfunctional families have learned codependency from the way we grew up. I believed for years that I was not good enough, and I sought love and approval wherever I went. If you are always telling the other person what to do, then you are probably trying to manipulate the relationship. On the other hand, if you are working to change your own inner patterns, then you are allowing things to happen in their right course. Take a moment to stand in front of a mirror and think about some of your own negative childhood beliefs that have been affecting your relationships. Can you see how you are still recreating the same beliefs? Think of some positive childhood beliefs. Do they hold the same charge for you as the negative ones? Tell yourself that the negative beliefs no longer serve you and replace them with new positive affirmations. You may want to write down the new beliefs and place them where you can see them every day. Again, be patient with yourself. Persevere with the new belief as much as you did with the old one. There were many times when I slipped back into old patterns before my new beliefs took root. Remember, when you are able to contribute to the fulfillment of your own needs, then you will not be so needy, so codependent. It all begins with how much you love yourself. When you truly love yourself, you stay centered, calm and secure, and your relationships at home as well as at work are wonderful. You will find yourself reacting to various situations and people differently. Matters that once may have been desperately important won't be quite as important anymore. New people will enter your life, and perhaps some old ones will disappear, which can be scary at first, and also wonderful, refreshing, and exciting. Once you know what you want in a relationship, you must go out and be with people. No one is going to suddenly appear at your doorstep. A good way to meet people is in a support group. It enables you to connect with people who are like-minded or who are involved in the same interests. It's amazing how quickly you can meet new friends. There are many groups and classes available in cities all around the world. You need to seek these groups out. It helps when you associate with people traveling a similar path. An affirmation, I suggest, is, I am open and receptive to wonderful good experiences coming into my life. It's much better than saying, I'm looking for a new lover. Be open and receptive, and the universe will respond for your highest good. You will find that as your self-love grows, so will your self-respect, and any changes that you find yourself needing to make will be easier to accomplish when you know that they are the right ones for you. Love is never outside yourself. It is always within you. As you are more loving, you will be more lovable. Beliefs about money. Having fear about the issue of money comes from our early childhood programming. A woman at one of my workshops said that her wealthy father had always had a fear of going broke, and he had passed on the fear that money would be taken away. She grew up being afraid that she wouldn't be taken care of. Her freedom with money was tied to the fact that her father manipulated his family through guilt. She had plenty of money all her life, and her lesson was to let go of the fear that she couldn't take care of herself. Even without all the money, she still could take care of herself. Many of our parents grew up in the Depression, and many of us have inherited beliefs when we were young, such as, we may starve, or we may never find work, or we may lose our home or our car or whatever. Very few children say, no, that's nonsense. Children accept it and say, yes, that's right. Make a list of your parents' beliefs about money. Ask yourself if you are still choosing to believe them now. You will want to go beyond your parents' limitations and fears because your life is not the same now. Stop repeating these old beliefs to yourself. Begin transforming the pictures in your mind. When an opportunity comes up, don't echo your past history of lack. Begin proclaiming the new message for today. You can begin now to affirm that it's okay to have money and riches, and that you will use your money wisely. It is normal and natural for us to have more money at certain times than others. If we can trust the power within us to always take care of us no matter what, we can easily flow through the lean times, knowing that we will have more in the future. Money isn't the answer, although many of us think that if we have a lot of money, everything will be fine. We won't have any more problems or worries. But money is truly not the answer. Some of us have all the money that we could ever need, and we still aren't happy. Be grateful for what you have. A gentleman I knew told me that he felt guilty because he couldn't pay back his friends for the kindness and gifts they gave him when he was not doing so well. I told him that there are times when the universe gives to us in whatever form we may need, and we may not be able to give back at that time. In whatever way the universe has decided to respond to your needs, be grateful. There will come a time when you will help someone else. It may not be with money, but with time or compassion. Sometimes we don't realize that these things can be more valuable than money. I can think of many people during the early days of my life who helped me enormously at a time when there was no way for me to pay them back. Years later, I've taken the opportunity to help others. Too often we feel we must exchange prosperity. We must reciprocate. If someone takes us to lunch, we immediately have to take them out to lunch. Or somebody gives us a gift, and we immediately have to buy one for them. We could learn to receive with thanks. Learn to accept, because the universe perceives our openness to receive as not just exchanging prosperity. Much of our problem stems from our inability to receive. We can give, but it's so difficult to receive. When someone gives you a gift, smile and say thank you. If you say to that person, oh, it's the wrong size or the wrong color, I guarantee the person won't ever give you another gift. Accept graciously. And if it really isn't right for you, give it to someone else who can use it. We want to be grateful for what we do have, so that we can attract more good to us. If we focus on lack, then we will draw it to us. If we are in debt, we need to forgive ourselves, not berate ourselves. We need to focus on the debt being paid off by doing affirmations and visualizations. The best thing we can do for people who are having money problems is to teach them how to create it in consciousness, because then it's lasting. It's much more lasting than handing them some money. I'm not saying don't give your money away, but don't give it away because you feel guilty. People seem to say, well, I have to help other people. You're a people too. You are somebody, and you're worthy of prosperity. Your consciousness is the best bank account you can have. When you put in worthwhile thoughts, you will reap large dividends. Tithing is a universal principle. One of the ways to attract money into your life is to tithe. Tithing 10% of your income has long been an established principle. I like to think of it as giving back to life. When we do that, we seem to prosper more. The churches have always wanted you to tithe to them. It's one of their principal ways of gathering income. In current years, that has expanded to tithing to where you get your spiritual food. Who or what has nourished you on your quest for improving the quality of your life? That could be the perfect place for you to tithe. If tithing to a church or a person doesn't appeal to you, there are many wonderful non-profit organizations that could benefit others by your contributions. Investigate and find the one that is right for you. People often say, I will tithe when I have more money. Of course, then they never do. If you are going to tithe, start now and watch the blessings flow. However, if you only tithe to get more, then you have missed the point. It must be freely given or it won't work. I feel that life has been very good to me, and I gladly give to life in various ways. There is so much abundance in this world just waiting for you to experience it. If you would know that there is more money than you could ever spend, or more people than you could ever meet, and more joy that you could possibly imagine, you would have everything you need and desire. If you ask for your highest good, then trust the power within to provide it for you. Be honest with yourself and others. Don't cheat, not even a little. It will only come back to you. The infinite intelligence that permeates all says yes to you. When something comes into your life, don't push it away. Say yes to it. Open yourself to receiving good. Say yes to your world. Opportunity and prosperity will increase 100-fold. Chapter 12, Expressing Your Creativity. When our inner vision opens, our horizons expand. Our work is a divine expression. When people ask me about my purpose in life, I tell them that my work is my purpose. It is very sad to know that most people hate their jobs, and even worse, that they don't know what they want to do. Finding your life's purpose, finding work that you love to do, is loving who you are. Your work serves as your expression of creativity. You need to go beyond your feelings of not being good enough or not knowing enough. Allow the creative energy of the universe to flow through you in ways that are deeply satisfying to you. It doesn't matter what you do, as long as it is satisfying to your being and it fulfills you. If you hate where you work or hate what you're doing, you will always feel the same about your job unless you change inside. If you go to a new job with your same old work beliefs, you will only feel the same way again in time. Part of the problem is that many people ask for what they want in a negative way. One woman had a very difficult time stating what she wanted in a positive way. She kept repeating, "I don't want this to be a part of the job," or "I don't want this to happen," or "I don't want to feel the negative energy there." Can you see that she was not declaring what she did want? We need to be clear on what we want. Sometimes it's troublesome to ask for what we want. It's so easy to say what we don't want. Start declaring what you want your work to be. "My work is deeply fulfilling. I help people. I am able to be aware of what they need. I work with people that love me. I feel safe at all times." Or perhaps, "My work allows me to express my creativity freely. I earn good money doing things I love." Or, "I am always happy at work. My career is filled with joy and laughter and abundance." Always declare in the present tense. What you declare, you will get. If you don't, then there are beliefs within you that are refusing to accept your good. Make a list of what I believe about work. You may be amazed at the negative beliefs within you. You won't prosper until you change those beliefs. When you work at a job you hate, you are shutting down your power to express itself. Think of the qualities you want in a job, what it would feel like if you had the perfect job. It is essential that you are clear about what you do want. Your higher self will find a job that is right for you. If you don't know, be willing to know. Open yourself to the wisdom that is inside you. I learned early through Science of Mind that my job was to express life. Every time I was presented with a problem, I knew it was an opportunity to grow, and that the power that created me had given me everything I needed to solve that problem. After my initial panic, I would quiet my mind and turn within. I gave thanks for the opportunity to demonstrate the power of the divine intelligence working through me. When at one of my workshops wanted to be an actress, her parents persuaded her to attend law school, and she was under a lot of pressure from everyone around her to go into law. However, she stopped going after 1 month. She decided to take an acting class because that is what she always wanted to do. Soon after, she started having dreams that she was going nowhere in her life, and she became miserable and depressed. She was having a problem letting go of her doubts and had reservations about making the biggest mistake in her life, which she feared she could never go back and change. I asked her, "Whose voice is that in there?" And she said those were the words that her father had told her several times. There are many people who can relate to this young woman's story. She wanted to act, and her parents wanted her to be a lawyer. She got to a point of confusion, not knowing what to do. She needed to understand that it was her father's way of saying, "I love you." If she became a lawyer, he felt she would be safe and secure, and that's what he wanted. However, it's not what she wanted. She had to do what was right for her life, even if it did not meet her father's expectations. I told her to sit in front of the mirror and look into her eyes and say, "I love you, and I support you in having what you really want. I'm going to support you in every way that I can." I told her to take the time to listen. She needed to connect to her inner wisdom and realized that she didn't have to please anyone other than herself. She could love her father and still fulfill herself. She had the right to feel worthy and able to do it. And she could tell her father, "I love you, and I don't want to be a lawyer. I want to be an actress," or whatever. It's one of our challenges to do what is right for us, even when those who care about us have other ideas. We are not here to fulfill other people's expectations. When we have strong beliefs that we don't deserve, we have problems doing what we want. If other people tell you that you can't have, and then you deny yourself, the child inside you doesn't believe it deserves anything good. Again, it comes back to learning and practicing ways to love yourself more each day. I repeat, do begin by writing down everything you believe about work and failure and success. Look at all the negatives and realize that those are the beliefs that keep you from flowing in this area. You may find you have many beliefs that say you deserve to fail. Take each negative statement and turn it into a positive one. Begin to shape in your mind what you want your fulfilling work to be. Your income can come from many sources. How many of us believe that we have to work hard to earn a good living? Especially in this country, there is a work ethic that implies that one must work hard to be a good person. And in addition to that, work is drudgery. I have found that if you work at what you love, you can usually create a good income for yourself. If you continually say, "I hate this job," you will get nowhere. Whatever you are doing, bring love and a positive attitude into it. If you are in an uncomfortable situation, look within to see what is the best lesson for you to learn from it. One woman told me that her belief system allowed money to come to her from all sorts of unexpected sources. Her friends criticized her ability to draw wealth to her in her unique way and insisted that she had to work hard to earn money. She said that they knew she didn't work hard at all. So she began to run the fear that if she didn't work hard, that meant that she didn't deserve the money she had. Her consciousness was on the right track originally. She needed to thank herself instead of becoming fearful. She understood how to manifest abundance, and her life was working in that area without any struggle. However, her friends wanted to pull her down because they all worked hard and they didn't have as much money as she did. Many times I reach out my hand to others, and if they take it and want to learn new things and go places, it's wonderful. If they try and drag me down, I say goodbye, and I work with somebody who really wants to come up out of the mud. If your life is filled with love and joy, don't listen to some miserable, lonely person who tells you how to run your life. If your life is rich and abundant, don't listen to someone who is poor and in debt tell you how to run it. Very often our parents are the ones telling us how to do things. They often come from a place of burden and hardship and misery and then try to tell us how to run our lives. Many people worry about the economy and believe they will either earn or lose money due to the economic situation at present. However, the economy is always moving up and down. So it doesn't matter what is happening out there or what others do to change the economy. We are not stuck because of the economy. No matter what is happening out there in the world, it only matters what you believe about yourself. If you have a fear about becoming homeless, ask yourself, where am I not at home within myself? Where do I feel abandoned? What do I need to do to experience inner peace? All outer experiences reflect inner beliefs. I have long used the affirmation, "My income is constantly increasing." Another affirmation I like is, "I go beyond my parents' income level." You see, you have a right to earn more than your parents did. It's almost a necessity as things cost more now. Women especially experience a lot of conflict with this one. Often they find it difficult to earn more than their fathers are earning. They need to go beyond their feelings of not deserving and accept the abundance of financial wealth that is their divine right. Your job is only one of many channels of an infinite source of money. Money is not the object of your right work. Money can come to you in many ways and from many avenues. no matter how it comes, accept it with joy and as a gift from the universe. A young lady was complaining that her in-laws were buying her new baby all sorts of nice things and she could not afford to buy anything. I reminded her that the universe wanted that baby to be well supplied with an abundance of all good and used the in-laws as a channel to supply it. She then could be grateful and appreciate the way in which the universe was providing for her baby. Relationships on the job. The relationships we create at work are similar to the relationships we have as a family. They can be healthy or they can be dysfunctional. A woman once asked me, as a person who is usually positive, how do I deal with people in a work environment who are constantly negative? First of all, I thought it interesting that she was in a work environment where everybody was negative when she said she was positive. I wondered why she was attracting negativity to her. Perhaps there was some negativity within her that she did not recognize. I suggested that she start to believe for herself that she always worked in an area where it was peaceful and joyful, where people really appreciated each other and life as a whole, where there was respect on all sides. Instead of complaining how so-and-so had to do it his way, she could affirm for herself that she always worked in the ideal place. By adopting this philosophy, she could either help bring out the best qualities in others, because they would be responding differently to her inner changes, or she would find herself in another work arena where the conditions would be as she declared. A man once told me that when he started his job, he had all these incredible instincts and his job was wonderful and sailed along smoothly. He was precise, direct, and satisfied. Suddenly he began to make mistakes every day, and I asked him what he was frightened of. Could it be an old childhood fear that was surfacing? Was there someone at work with whom he was angry, or was he trying to get even with somebody? Did that person remind him of one of his parents? Had this happened in other jobs? It seemed to me that he was creating some chaos at work because of an old belief system. He recognized that it was an old family pattern where he was ridiculed every time he made a mistake. I suggested that he forgive his family and affirm that he now has wonderful, harmonious relationships at work, where people totally respect him and appreciate everything he does. When you think of your coworkers, don't think, oh, they're so negative. Everybody has every quality in them, so respond to the good qualities that are in them and respect their peacefulness instead. When you can focus on these qualities, they will rise to the surface. If others are constantly saying negative things, don't pay attention. You want to change your consciousness. Since they are reflecting something negative within you, when your consciousness really changes, negative people won't be around very much. Even if you feel frustrated, start affirming what you want to have in your workspace. Then accept it with joy and thanksgiving. One woman had an opportunity at work to do what she loved and to grow from the experience. However, she would constantly get sick and sabotage herself. She recalled that when she was a child, she was always getting sick because it was her way of getting love and affection. So she kept recreating the pattern of getting sick as an adult. What she needed to learn was how to get love and affection in a more positive way. When anything went wrong at work, she went right back to being the 5-year-old girl. So when she began to take care of her little inner child, she also learned to feel safe and to accept her power. Competition and comparison are two major stumbling blocks to your creativity. Your uniqueness sets you apart from all others. There has never been another person like you since time began. So what is there to compare or compete with? Comparison either makes you feel superior or inferior, which are expressions of your ego, your limited mind thinking. if you are going to compare to make yourself feel a little bit better, then you are saying somebody else isn't good enough. If you put others down, you may think you will raise yourself up. What you really do is put yourself in a position to be criticized by others. We all do this on some level, and it's good when we can transcend it. Becoming enlightened is to go within and shine the light upon yourself so that you can dissolve whatever darkness is in there. I want to say again that everything changes, and what was perfect for you once may not be anymore. In order for you to keep changing and growing, you keep going within and listening for that which is right for you in the here and now. Changing the way we do business. For the past several years, I've owned my own business. My motto has been that we open the mail and answer the phone and handle what is in front of us, and there is always plenty to do. As we did this day by day, the business grew from a few people to well over 20 employees. We established our business on spiritual principles, using affirmations to open and close meetings. We realized that many other businesses ran on competition, often condemning others, or greed, and we did not want to put that energy out to others, knowing that it would come back to us. We decided that if we were going to live by the philosophy, we were not going to operate under the old concepts of doing business. If problems arose, we would spend time affirming what we wanted to change. We also had a soundproof screaming room where employees could let off steam without being heard or judged. It was also a place where they could meditate or relax, and we supplied it with plenty of tapes for people to listen to. It became a safe haven in times of difficulty. I remember a time when we were having many problems with our computer system, and every day something would break down. Because I believe machines reflect our consciousness, I realized that many of us were sending negative energy to the computers, and we were expecting them to constantly break down. I had an affirmation programmed into the computer. Good morning. How are you today? I work well when I am loved, and I love you. In the morning, when everyone turned on their computers, that message would appear. It's amazing how we had no more problems with our computers. Sometimes we think of things that happen, especially at work, as disasters. But we must look at them for what they are. Simply life experiences that always teach us something. I know that I have never had a disaster that did not end up a good learning experience in the end, often moving me to a much better level in life. For instance, recently my company, Hay House, was not doing so well. Like the economy, our sales would go up and down, and it appeared that sales were down and staying that way, at least for the moment. However, we did not adjust to that, and month after month, we were spending more than we took in. Anyone who has owned a business knows that that is not the way to do it. Eventually, it looked as if I would lose my business if I didn't take some drastic measures. Those drastic measures included letting go of over half my staff. You can imagine how difficult it was for me to do that. I remember walking into the conference room where all my staff had gathered to deliver the news. I was in tears, but I knew it had to be done. As difficult as it was for all of us, I also trusted that my much-loved employees would soon find new and better jobs, and almost all of them have. Some of them have even started their own businesses and are very successful. At the darkest time, I kept knowing and affirming that this experience would turn out to be for the highest good of all concerned. Of course, everyone else assumed the worst. Rumors were flying that Hay House was belly up, not just within the people I knew, but all over the country. Our sales staff were surprised that so many business people even knew about our company, let alone its financial condition. I have to admit that we took great joy in proving these forecasts wrong. By tightening our belts tremendously, we didn't go belly up. With our smaller staff, and each of us determined to make it work, we've come through it very well, But most importantly, we have learned a lot. In the meantime, Hay House is now doing better than ever. My staff is enjoying their work, and I am enjoying my staff. Even though we are all working harder, the interesting thing is that no one feels that they have too much work to do. We are even getting more books out than we ever had, and are attracting much more prosperity in all areas of our lives. I believe that everything does work out for the best in the end, but sometimes it is hard to see that while you are going through the experience. Think of a negative experience that may have happened to you in your work or in your past in general. Perhaps you were fired, or maybe your spouse left you. Now go beyond it and take a look at the big picture. Didn't many good things happen as a result of that experience? I've heard so many times, "Yes, that was a horrible thing that happened to me, but if it hadn't, I would never have met so-and-so, or start my own business, or admit that I had an addiction, or learn to love myself." By trusting the divine intelligence to let us experience life in the way that is best for us, we empower ourselves to actually enjoy everything that life has to offer, the good as well as the so-called bad. Try applying this to your work experiences and notice the changes that happen to you. Those who own or operate businesses can begin to function as an expression of divine intelligence. It is important to keep the lines of communication open with employees and allow them to express their feelings about their work in a safe way. Make sure the offices are a neat and clean place to work. Here again, clutter in an office reflects the consciousness of the people working there. With all the physical clutter, how can the mental or intellectual tasks be done well and on time? You could adopt a statement of purpose that reflects the desired philosophy of your business. At Hay House, we feel our purpose is creating a world where it is safe for us to love each other. When you allow divine intelligence to operate in all aspects of business, then everything flows on purpose and according to a divine plan. The most wonderful opportunities will fall in your lap. I see many businesses beginning to change. There will come a time when business will not be able to survive using the old ways of competition and conflict. One day we will all know that there is plenty for everyone and that we can bless and prosper each other. Companies can begin to shift their priorities and make it a great place for their workers to express themselves and have their products and services benefit the planet in general. People want to get more out of their work than just a paycheck. They want to contribute to the world and feel fulfilled. In the future, the ability to do good on a global level will overshadow the need for materialism.